Good morning. I bring you greetings from one of the few states remaining where when a politician stands up to speak to an audience and says, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help," both the speaker and the audience know it's a joke. To redeem myself, before I made Texas Monthly's 10 best list 2 times, I was named to their 10 worst list 2 times. And hold the singular distinction of being named the worst of the worst. So I think I'm okay there. I'm delighted to be here today to talk, not only to have the opportunity to talk to you, but especially to sit in the audience and to learn more about one of our favorite subjects on the state level, and that is federalism. Because it's so important to our state legislators, it is also important to those of us in the state think tank world. What a time in our political life we have had over the last 3 years. There are many in our nation who are taking a second look, a soul-searching look at what the foundation of our nation is really all about, and yearning to return to that. At the end of June, the Supreme Court of the United States had an opportunity to set a new course for this nation. After decades of decisions that redefine the relationship between the states and the federal government from that established by our written Constitution, the country waited anxiously over the 2 years preceding that decision to see if the Supreme Court would right the ship. With the possible exception of Roe v. Wade, I don't believe that there has been a more hotly debated court case since Dred Scott. And like Dred Scott, the Supreme Court thought that they were going to be settling the issue when, in fact, all they did was fuel the flames. The nation did not accept the court's decision to not stand for individual liberty in 1857, and it is my hope that our nation will not accept the court's failure to do so in 2012. But as bad as the Obamacare ruling was for individual liberties, and as disappointed as we were that the court did not put the genie of the Commerce Clause back in the bottle, there was a tiny bit of good news in the ruling. When they ruled that Medicaid expansion, the requirement that was in Obamacare, was unconstitutional, and therefore states had the option of whether or not to participate. Conditional federal funding, for the first time, actually did have limits. But as Mr. Meese said last night, the whole concept of conditional federal funds violates the separation of powers between the federal government and the states. That practice alone has allowed the federal government to engorge itself on the states' powers and has caused the funding of the government to consume more and more of our national GDP. We consider ourselves to be jealous of the balance of power between the three branches of government at the federal level, but few of us realize just how effectively Congress has expanded their power as they have hidden that power in the federal bureaucracies and in the states. I became a member of the Texas House in 1995. And was startled even then to discover that the state government was little more than a branch bank of the federal government. That problem is beginning to come to light now as states, whether they are red or blue states, are struggling to meet the demands of the Medicaid system. The bite that it is taking out of state governments is making it very difficult, if not impossible, to meet the increasing demands of the state for education funding, transportation, criminal justice, and all of the other things that states are supposed to do. This Medicaid program is called a federal-state partnership, but Judge Roger Vinson of the trial court on the Obamacare case noted that it was a very one-sided partnership, that states were a very junior partner and truly had little control over the design of the program. Even before Obamacare, though, Medicaid was a program that was ultimately going to bankrupt the states. Obamacare tightened the requirements even more and basically said to states that they had to live within whatever their benefits and eligibility program prescribed on the day that Obamacare was passed. But our research shows that even without Obamacare, whether you're looking at the state share or you're looking at all funds, that the cost of Medicaid will double every 10 years through the year 2040. That's as far as we projected. Double every 10 years with or without Obamacare. So is Obamacare a problem? Absolutely, for the states for Medicaid. But it is not the only problem. Some would attribute the overall healthcare inflation as the main contributor to this problem and say that government must provide the solution. However, we at Texas Public Policy Foundation think that government is the problem, that more government will only make the problem worse. The tragedy of Obamacare is that it came at a time when healthcare really did need to be reformed. And this administration has squandered the opportunity for real reform by going in the exact opposite direction of what was needed, trampling on individual liberties and states' rights in the process. But I'd like to spend just a few minutes talking to you about the misguided and even harmful design of the Medicaid program. We have one of my fellow panelists is from the University of Virginia. Last year, the University of Virginia put out a study that was a true blockbuster study that demonstrated that the survivability after surgery, the outcomes from that, that the Medicaid recipients, the Medicaid patients, had the worst outcome of any cohort, including the uninsured. Now, those on the other side tried to discredit that report, but not only were they unable to do so, but several other studies have also said the same. The outcomes for patient health are very, very poor for Medicaid patients. So that is supposed to be the primary goal of those who promote this system, is to take care of the credit, take care of the health care needs of the poor. Another problem, in addition to the outcomes problem, is an access problem. Medicaid on paper is probably the richest benefit package anywhere in the world. But the problem is you very likely cannot access those benefits. In Texas, only 31% of our physicians will accept a new Medicaid patient. That's even worse than what we hear about all the time with Medicare patients trying to find a doctor who will take them. The reimbursement is so low, and this is not just unique to Texas, this is across the country. The reimbursement is so low, the reporting is such a burden, and the patients are so non-compliant that the physicians have just said, no, thank you. One doctor told me that it would be better for her financially to hand every Medicaid patient a $5 bill when they walked in the door and ask them to go somewhere else. Hospitals list the Medicaid compensation or the lack of Medicaid compensation as their largest category of uncompensated care. So we taxpayers are paying a premium for an expensive, inefficient program that delivers poor outcomes. And this administration wants to condemn even more U.S. citizens to that program. Is there a better way? Absolutely, there is a better way. Our research last year demonstrated that if we take just the acute care population, Medicaid is two populations, 30,000 foot view. It's mothers and children, which we call acute care side, which is most like our insurance model, and then it's the long-term care services and supports. Without touching long-term care, we discovered that in Texas, we could cover everyone in the state up to 175% of poverty, over 7 million Texans, adults included. We could, by applying a sliding scale to a premium support, much like what Paul Ryan has recommended for Medicare, that we could cover all those people for 95% of the money that we spent in the state's biennial budget in 08-09. Twice as many people, applying some common sense rules to the program, we can cover more people, we can do it cheaper, and we can provide them with better care if they have access to the same kind of insurance that you and I enjoy. They're going to have access to the same providers that you and I enjoy. It is amazing to me that we have not had any major redesigns of this program since it came into being in 1965. It was just piling on. It started out and we added another program and added another program and added another service, and the states added more services, drawing down federal money, and it has become the largest single item, the second largest single item in our state's budget. We spend more on Medicaid alone than we do on anything except education. And I don't think we are definitely not getting value for our dollar. There are so many benefits that would come from the system that I described, especially when you add an HSA component to it. The health outcomes, when you stop and think about that, so much of that non-compliance is because the Medicaid recipient places no value on what they have received for free. Studies have shown that as little as a $5 copay improves outcomes. Yet, and at the same time, just about every other program that we have for taking care of the poor involves a sliding scale. Even our federally qualified health centers, who deliver more care to the uninsured than any other single service provider, uses a sliding scale from 0% of poverty and up. When you have skin in the game, you are not only more appreciative, but you're more compliant with what the doctor orders. Most of you have had children, had ear infections, take the kid to the doctor, and get this antibiotic that the doctor says, you don't stop taking it, don't stop giving it to the child when they start feeling better. You have to go the whole 10 days. Well, I can tell you as a mom that had children who were once little, that on days 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, that's hard to do. When the kid is up playing and having a great time and you're having to continue to give them that antibiotic. But I knew that if I didn't, I would be back in the doctor's office paying for another doctor visit, getting the privilege of paying for another prescription, and going the whole circle again. But if I didn't have to pay for that other doctor visit, and if I didn't have to pay for that other prescription of antibiotics, my incentives for continuing to deliver that antibiotic on days 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 would be less. And that's what we find with the Medicaid population. They are the least compliant to show up for appointments and to do what the doctor and the pharmacist tell them to do. Another big problem that I have with the Medicaid system as it is and would be remedied by what I have outlined is family formation. It is offensive to me that we as a people have said, we don't give a rip about the fathers. We're not going to cover them. We don't care if they go to work. We don't care if they get sick. If a family is poor, the whole family is poor. And Medicaid is one of the primary programs that works against family formation. Family formation has been proven by the left and the right to be the best way out of poverty. But yet we have a program that is only available to pregnant women and children. So does that make sense? Not to me. It also would eliminate the financial cliff that traps people in poverty, because Medicaid is 100% or it's nothing. You get up to $25 more in income than is allowed, and you're off the program, zero, 100% or nothing. So what do you think happens to the people when they fall off that financial cliff if they allow themselves to do that? They go straight to the uninsured rolls. We have not trained people to be responsible for purchasing their own health insurance. So personal responsibility would be enhanced, family formation would be enhanced, if states were allowed by the federal government to do what makes sense, not only for the state's budget, but also for the Medicaid recipient. And in my closing, I'd like to say that although I'm a big fan of block grants and push hard for block grants, I feel a little bit like Jacob working 7 years and then he got Leah. You know, we're still not where we need to be. As Ed Meese pointed out last night, the whole concept of conditional federal funds is the problem. How much better it would be if we had Rachel, if we could, as a nation, as a state rather, not send our money in the first place to the federal government, but allow the states and her citizens to make those decisions. Federalism is vitally important to us at the state level. It has been one of the biggest problems that state legislatures face and will continue to be until we recognize the importance of the proper role of government and return to it. Thank you very much.